This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hope everybody had a great holiday yesterday as we welcome you into this Friday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. We are live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas alongside Mike Palm, the VP of Operations at this great establishment. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Got a jam-packed 2 hours ahead. Excited to have you along with us. And I hope you had a good 4th of July. Seems like you did, getting home yesterday with the family.
Yeah, we took a few days off and went up to Utah. To Zion and went camping, camping and not glamping, real camping in a tent. You know, it's a shame because they put a fire ban on July 1st. So the day after we got there, my wife prepared all these meals to cook on fire. And we still had the little butane stove, but it took her several hours to cook all she prepared that she could have done on a fire. But she had chicken, we had great fish meals. So that was nice. Hiking with the kids, did some hiking along riverbeds where they got to play in the little streams and rivers. Went up on Wednesday, went up to Bryce where it's like 12 degrees cooler. I mean, it's record heat everywhere, but it's like 12 degrees cooler. Did some hiking at Bryce from Sunrise Point to Sunset Point. And then yesterday after we packed up the gear, I actually drove to Arizona and went to Horseshoe Bend with the kids and then got back last night, went swimming, barbecued, got cleaned up, and then sat out and watched the fireworks.
Full week experience. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you had fun. I'm, speaking of the weather, mentally preparing for what apparently is going to be a record high here in Vegas on Monday. But apparently yesterday in Coney Island, it was hot dog weather. And I am so excited to welcome in our first guest here. I don't know if anybody had a better 4th of July than Mickey Sudo, who joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Collected her 10th mustard belt yesterday. Had a women's world record 51 hot dogs and buns. Mickey, you are in a class of your own in the competition. Thank you so much for joining us. And what was yesterday like?
Thanks for having me. Yesterday was a whole roller coaster of emotions. Ultimately, the weather cooperated. My body cooperated. We have a new women's world record. I set a PR, obviously. I got my 10th belt. That's what everybody sees. But behind the scenes, I was a wreck leading up to the contest. Just 24 hours prior, Mayoi Ebihara of Japan said that she was doing 50 in practice and that she was breaking the women's world record. I'm like, well, if she's going to do that, I guess I have to too. So I was just really, you don't want your competition to get in your head. But it really had me, it lit a fire under me ultimately, but I was not at ease. But I was able to pull it off, and what a great year to do so, because the women's contest was aired in its entirety in the broadcast, so it was a super cool year.
Thank you for joining us so much, Mickey. You were on with Mitch and Paul on Wednesday on Follow the Money, and I went back and listened to the segment. I mean, you were spot on in terms of the over-unders for both the men and the women, including yourself, including Ebihara. You said if she went over your number or she met your number of 40 and a half, you would have to do much better. You did, obviously, and congratulations on the record. You talked about the two things that are the key here in being successful as being capacity and technique. How much can a person improve their capacity versus improving their technique?
So I know that I guess it depends on the competitor. I feel like, and I should probably throw in one more limiting factor, and that's your ability to handle flavor fatigue. That's probably my weakest point, actually. So over the course of 10 minutes, that's why we have a beverage to offset the flavor of the hot dog. Over the course of 10 minutes, that very flavorful, savory taste kind of is overwhelming. So I know I have the space. I can, get my hand-eye-mouth coordination committed to muscle memory. You really want to be super efficient when it comes to that. But flavor fatigue is where I felt like I had the most work to do. But as far as my competition goes, Mayoi, I know, has the space to do what I did yesterday. If you check out her YouTube channel, the girl can eat, in the double digits in terms of poundage. I just don't think she's accustomed to eating the way that we do in a 10-minute time frame. So, while she did improve, and I do see her improving year after year, she wasn't able to pull it off, and I'm glad that, my hard work paid off.
Yeah, and you got the hardware there to show for it, which is awesome to have the visual right now. But you've talked about being able to hit 50 in your own practice rounds, but you hadn't been able to do it on the big stage yet. What's the biggest difference between those practice moments and the challenge of then being on the Nathan's hot dog eating contest stage with all of those fans? How much tougher is it to go from one environment to another?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people can eat more in the comfort of their own home. So what, you know, one of the things that Nick and I did, Nick and Pete's on the guy side, is we really use that Tampa heat and humidity to our advantage for our practices. I guess it's a disadvantage when it comes to practice, but you know, we really put our bodies through the test. You know, I'm no stranger to Las Vegas, obviously. You're experiencing the wave. But so we've got not quite that heat, but we've got the humidity. And we really use that to push ourselves to the limit, to put up high numbers in uncomfortable conditions.
You were so good at prognosticating number of hot dogs eaten and where the ceilings would be. If you could, take us to Labor Day when we have this Grandmasters Clash of the Champions with Joey Chestnut and Kobayashi, and the challenges both have coming into this, and how you think ultimately the result will be and who the winner will be.
Yeah, so I, I know Joey very well. He's been a friend of mine for over a decade. And now, you know, Nick and I are great friends with him and his fiancee, Bree. You know, we spend a lot of time together. You know, the only reason I can't exactly comment on the results or what I would is because I don't know the rules of their game. And in fact, from the little bit that I know going on behind the scenes, those rules are still actually being agreed upon by the two parties. From what I know right now, it's not going to be a dunking contest, but I don't know if that's set in stone. I actually don't even know for how long they're going to be eating. I don't even know if that's set in stone. So that's the only reason I can't give you a solid number. When the rules come out, I'd be happy to, you know, throw my two cents in. In the meantime, you know, I don't see anybody overtaking Joey in hot dogs. You know, weather was in both their primes, or actually, I can't really say that because Joey's numbers actually continue to improve. Kobayashi's been away from this kind of hot dog eating for a while. You know, even if Kobayashi's been training in some sort of hot dog gym for the last decade, I really don't see anybody overtaking Joey when it comes to hot dogs. Like, I've seen Joey do incredible numbers, even more impressive than what he's done on the Nathan stage. That guy has even more to give than the public has seen. So Joey is incredibly formidable. No matter what rules they agree on, my money's on Chestnut.
Well, I mean, you think about what Patrick Bertoletti did yesterday to win his first mustard belt with 58. And then you go on and see this YouTube live stream of Joey Chestnut putting down 57 in 5 minutes. It's just, it's insane what he did. What was it like, though, not having him around at the event and how that opened up the field for some of the other men's competitors?
Yeah, like I said, Joey's been a great friend. I know I've heard some people kind of get a little bit negative saying that, you know, he turned his back on a 4th of July tradition to go accept more money doing other things. You know, I mean, obviously, Joey runs the Joey business, as we all take what we do seriously. And, you know, he made a financial decision. And as a friend, personally, I'm happy for him. And, you know, even as a fan, I think what people are going to appreciate is that you're going to see Joey kick butt just in different arenas against other people. So, you know, obviously, this is not a goodbye to Chestnut. We're just going to see him, like, explore other avenues. And, you know, I know that door to MLE and with Nathan's is still going to be open in the future. So we'll see. In the meantime, what it did mean for our contest is you saw a really, really close race. I mean, that leaderboard went back and forth. I know Nick was leading it for a couple minutes, you know, and you had four competitors ultimately who ate over 50, all setting PRs. And I think that was really cool to see. Congratulations to Pat Bertoletti. You know, it's I think it's just really exciting to see how people are going to progress. Given that, like, that belt, that title, that check, you know, that trophy, everything's up for grabs now.
Okay, Mickey, what's next for you? There was a big fall off between Ibihara and then the third place finisher from 38 down to 23. Is this sport going to be a two-lady contest moving forward in the near future? And do you see, with the rise of popularity now, as you mentioned, the women's was televised in its entirety for the first time. Do you see more women getting into the competitive eating scene?
I mean, I hope so. You know, yeah, especially if the women's contest is going to be broadcast in its entirety, I think the public kind of the crowd deserves to see high numbers, you know, tight contests. You know, it just makes it more exciting all around. And, you know, on the guy's side, you've seen the numbers increase. And for some reason, you don't exactly see that on the women's side. So I don't know if it's kind of like this, you know, self-imposed barrier on, you know, the part of you know, my female counterparts, you know, maybe it's the shyness. I'm just kind of hoping to take away from that stigma. Look, you know, it's not the most glamorous thing you can do, but it's competitive eating. It's not competitive prettiness. And at the end of the day, everybody's just there to cheer you on and have a great time too. So if it's like self-consciousness, it's keeping you from throwing your name in the ring, you know, just forget about all that. I would love to see the women's event grow. That's kind of a blow to me to hear Michelle only did 23. I actually wasn't aware of that. You know, obviously I'm running my own race. I don't pay attention to my competitors, if I can help it, during those 10 minutes. You know, Michelle's a great friend of mine. What else? Looking to the future, look, if Joey's doing, a six-figure, seven-figure deal with Kobayashi over Labor Day, hey, look, Netflix, where's that female counterpart?
Let's go.
Right? Right? I'm just throwing that out there, you know, Miki Sudo versus Mayoi Ebihara. Maybe that's like the next Netflix streaming special in competitive eating.
Miki, we got to go, but I have one quick one, if you can answer in just about 20 seconds or not. Does you being a world record holder in so many of these different foods ever turn you off from some foods like hot dogs or ice cream or kimchi that you've eaten so much of? Do you not like that in day-to-day life? Or are you good?
No, just to put it quickly, what competitive eating does, it makes you appreciate and love the foods you already enjoy. And it reminds you why you're not a huge fan of others, but you never liked them in the first place.
Great stuff. We so appreciate you. And congrats on 10. Amazing.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Thanks, Miki.
Miki Sudo, 10-time mustard belt champ, set the world record at the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest yesterday with 51 hot dogs and buns. It is the Super Bowl of Major League Eating and in my favorite event of the summer, hands down. We're going to hit the break when we come back. Lots of NFL news and notes we've got to get to here on the Lombardi Line. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The wait is over. Our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide is out now. Your secret weapon for the upcoming season with in-depth profiles of each and every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems and betting trends, and a whole lot more, including, of course, all of our experts sharing their top bets on season win totals, futures, and props, giving you the insights you need ahead of the season. But in order to get the guide, you need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. And for a limited time, we're offering a full subscription for $199, down from our usual $240 price, when you use our promo code Lombardi. Plus, when you use the code Lombardi, we're also throwing in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do. That includes the daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and of course, our all-new special edition betting guides. Don't miss out on this special offer. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now and use the promo code Lombardi for 13 months of VSiN Pro for just $199. Again, you got to use that code in order to secure your discount and the extra month. Mike Palm and Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back to this Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. Lots of NFL news and notes to get to, including the headline of the day, which caught a few people by surprise here, that Dallas Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott was photographed in a walking boot in Cabo earlier this week. So this photo's kind of made the rounds. There's been some conflicting reports. According to Ian Rappaport, Prescott's dealing with a very minor foot sprain and has for a few days, but it's not considered anything that would affect his preparation for the season as we get closer to training camp. But Prescott, in a text to the Star-Telegram, said, quote, "I'm great," and that he was wearing the boot for precautionary reasons because the last time he went deep sea fishing, his ankle swole up. It's the same ankle that he injured back in 2020 that he has protected there. Is this something or is this nothing? Because it feels a little sus.
The explanation makes you think it's something to say that, well, when I go deep sea diving, my ankles swell up. Well, as Stephanie's producer, Stephanie Kamerschenk said, then don't go deep sea diving. The reason is a poor reason. Obviously, there's something there that he's already tweaked the ankle, and it's not a precautionary thing. Now, is it going to have an effect on his prep for the upcoming season? I don't know, but why lie? I always say, why lie?
Well, but to your point, though, if it's precautionary and you know that this is something that has caused you problems before, your body is what makes you money. Like, this is your job. You know that you shouldn't be doing stuff like this if it's going to impact you. So that's one side of it. But also, I saw reports that were unsubstantiated, granted, earlier this week about potentially that he had an MRI and was going through XYZ. Steve Fezzik, I saw a video from him on social media saying that because of some of the thoughts about Dak Prescott actually having an injury, that money's been going on the season win total under on the Dallas Cowboys, more and more people interested in the Eagles in the division. Like, it's impactful from a betting standpoint here early.
I think that could be for other reasons as well. Not sure. that doesn't factor into the bettor's mind, but I think when you look at what these two teams have done organizationally with their rosters, remember, 2 months ago, Dallas was the favorite here, a slight favorite over the Eagles. Now the Eagles are drifting down to even money from a point where you could have got them at plus 160, 170 earlier after the season ended because, you know, obviously they were on that terrible run, but they did very well in the draft. And what did Dallas really do? They signed the long snapper, right? We still have what's going on with
the
X
contract. They only got worse. They did nothing to get better, right?
They didn't do anything to get better, I don't think. And when you saw them ending the year, they were getting blown out at home by the Packers. And yet another mind-numbing playoff performance and an exit in the first round. And add to the fact, it's been how many years? 22 years since anybody's repeated in the NFC East? Like, so all signs point to Eagles. Well, obviously, it's not a good thing. Maybe you take advantage of this if you are pro-Dallas and let the number keep going down.
In terms, I mean, obviously, whenever we talk about Dak Prescott, it's very natural for the contract conversation to arise with this as well. I'm still very much so of the belief that regardless of what happens with Dak Prescott this year, even if he does have an injury, even if he does have a bad year, that when he hits the market next year, he's going to get paid and he could very easily be the first $60 million man that we have seen in the NFL.
Well, the biggest benefactor of Trevor Lawrence is Dak Prescott. I don't think there's any question that he's going to get paid, and he's going to get paid a lot of money. Now, whether he's worth it, I don't know. It hasn't translated to playoff success so far in his career. And I still think in baseball, they call it high leverage pitches. I still think in high leverage moments, I'm not sure that he's the answer. He's very good as a front runner. When they get out in front in games and they're rolling, it's great. And at home, great. But in tough spots, when they get behind on the road, I think about like in Arizona in week 3 last year, right? That was took a lot of people out and survived. Yeah. If not for the fact people were saving them for Thanksgiving, it might have taken out 80% of the field because that looked like the gimme game of the year going to Arizona. They got behind and could never mount anything. And it's not like Arizona put up 40 points. He couldn't convert third downs. They couldn't get into the end zone. I don't know if he can get it done in the clutch, but that's more commentary.
And the postseason struggles obviously speak for themselves as well. Not that all of that's on him, but the fact that they haven't been able to get to an NFC title game in decades is problematic. Dak Prescott, again, the update as of right now is that he is out of the boot, but we'll continue to monitor this. Obviously, training camps beginning later on this month across the NFL. While on quarterback health, might as well talk about Joe Burrow as well, who reportedly told Ben Felderstein of Complex.com that he's focusing on staying healthy. Quote, number one, I want to be on the field for all the games. I know I'm going to play well when I'm out there. I'm at the point in my career where I've seen enough ball and I know myself that I can go out there and play as well as anybody in the game. The biggest strides this year are going to be my body and learning how to get through this season and get through practices with my body feeling in tip-top shape.
Is that a load management quote? that's what I think of when I read the quote when Steph sent the rundown yesterday. You know, I think that's good if you like Cincinnati, though. I mean, he's obviously concerned and knows the focus is he has to stay healthy. And when he can stay healthy for a whole season, we've seen him go to a Super Bowl. We've seen them be the kryptonite to Kansas City. Really,
the only team. Yeah.
Only team. And I keep looking at this and being higher and higher on Cincinnati. You know, they finished 9-8, but they have a fourth place schedule, right? I mean, the schedule is so favorable. The Steelers' schedule is brutal. I think Baltimore loses a lot on the defensive side of the ball, not just their coordinator, but also in terms of talent. I think Baltimore finished the year in the worst way possible, not trusting their offense in the running game and panicking down one score to Kansas City in the AFC Championship game, throwing the ball on second and third and four down the field. I think there's a lot of things that point to Cincinnati. I question the Cleveland defense road home splits. I mean, it was ridiculous. It'll be interesting week one. I think a terrific game where Tom Brady makes his debut, but Dallas at Cleveland, right? Cleveland's so good at home. Dallas struggles on the road. Should be a real good matchup. But everything seems to point Cincinnati winning that division and maybe getting a one seed. I think there's opportunities. They're the only team I bet to win the Super Bowl so far.
Well, and the fact that they won 9 games last year despite going through the gamut that they did at quarterback, right? And they finished last in their division. with nine wins still, yeah, with Jake Browning leading the way. So, yeah, when you have Joe Burrow back under center, I was looking through our NFL betting guide, and obviously we had 21 of our VSiN analysts and experts and hosts all put their opinions in here. And despite the Ravens being the defending division champs, they were the top seed in the AFC last year. I mean, the Bengals here have 9 of the 21 picks.
Isn't that summary page great in the guide? Great. I loved it. I study it all the time in the play and who you have as the wild cards and going through.
It's interesting.
It's good to get consensus. I think it's really interesting that the AFC South is the only one that's like split between three teams. Mm-hmm. Like there's equal support, Jacksonville, Indianapolis, and Houston almost in this guide.
Correct. And I liked looking at some of the just random outliers in some where you have the Browns, for example, in the AFC North, only one person picked the Browns to win the division. You go to the NFC South where everybody picked either the Atlanta Falcons, who are an odds-on favorite. There was some love for the Saints. Nothing for the Buccaneers, who have won three straight division titles. And a rogue Panthers pick. Yeah. So, some of these are very interesting.
You would have thought the NFC South would have been more even in the support, right? But it's clearly two teams.
Well, and I think, like, with that division specifically, because the Atlanta Falcons, yes, they make the upgrade with Kirk Cousins leading the way at quarterback, a huge step up from what they had with Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heinicke, the list goes on. But also the schedule coming through as easy as it is. It's very easy to jump on Atlanta in that division, just on paper.
And people think the coaching change will make a difference as well. With Arthur Smith being gone, you'll still have to see it on the field.
Which is questionable. Yeah, it's odd to me that everyone's like, oh, yeah, Raheem Morris is going to be great. Like, okay, I haven't seen that yet, but that'll be cool. They're, I think, reasonable questions.
We had Adam Chernoff on last week on Follow the Money, and he has two teams that he has. Like, I want to know who you're betting the alts on, right? Yeah. If you lean over on a team's traditional win total, okay. But these pro bettors, I want to know who they're high on the alts. He's very high on the alt Broncos, under. He thinks the Broncos are the worst team, worse than the Patriots.
Wow.
And he loves Carolina. He said bet them over 6.5, 7.5, maybe even 8, and bet them to make playoffs. He thinks that Carolina is that much undervalued in the market.
I think that Carolina takes a step, and I am so opposite of all the people that are like, oh, after 1 year, Bryce Young is a bust. I do not believe that at all. He also didn't have much of a chance behind the offensive line that he had either. There's a lot of things that need to come together, but I think Dave Canales alone will be such a help for Bryce Young's development, and they spent so much money to upgrade the guys up front. Everything they're doing is to try to set Bryce Young up for success, and hopefully they do get better. But that to make the playoffs seems a little
strong.
Bit rich.
He said take a little shot at the playoffs, but he likes all the overs.
Okay.
I think it's also better, it's less toxic to that organization, right? That was a pretty toxic place for a while.
And again, sorry to hammer the point with Bryce Young, but he also had Frank Reich and then Thomas Brown. And now this is a third voice in such a short amount of time, but now you'll have one singular voice coming to you from a communication standpoint. Yep. Speaking of rookies, we'll look at this year's rookie class and some trends that Steve Mackinnon has for us coming up next.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, you'll love all of our great betting tools and content available at VSiN.com each and every day. Best bets from our VSiN show hosts and experts, analysts that join each and every show, betting splits, exclusive articles. You can check out odds by state, as well as several other betting tools and betting guides. The NFL betting guide out now if you head to VSiN.com/guide. Become a subscriber today. Alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Talking a little rookie quarterbacks here. Tom Curran of NBCSportsBoston.com believes the most likely scenario for Patriots rookie quarterback Drake May is that he won't become a starter until late in the season. He predicts that May will get his first start against the Colts in week 13, the back end of the year. He says the team's playoff hopes will be extinguished. So a lot of the season then becomes about 2025 and could end up reminiscent of 1993 when the light went on for Drew Bledsoe and the Patriots finished with a, quote, flourish.
Who, Stormy, and I don't know this answer, is in their quarterback room after Brissett? If they don't want to start May until late in the year, do you think Brissett's going to last for 13 weeks and stay healthy?
That's a tough question. They still have Bailey Zappe in the room. But I just don't want...
I just think Brissett is not going to hold up that long. They're bringing him. I used to say, you know, my thing about Brissett is he's so immobile to me. He's like a statue, right? He's not dainty in the pocket. He's not quick with his feet. And so Like last year, remember when Howell, were they going to play Howell or not? And like the line move a whole point when it's Brissett. And I'm like, Brissett's a whole point better than Howell. That's still how he's regarded in the market. But I still think he's a relief pitcher at this point in his career. And I think you have to.
Well, that's why he's a bridge. Yeah. Like, you know, in this situation.
But a bridge to get through 13 weeks, I don't think is. So Zappi's probably going to have to. If they really don't want to put May in there, if they have their own reasons that they think their team is in such a way, they don't want to get him in there and get him hurt or get him in bad habits or always getting crushed, then I think it's unrealistic to think that Brissett will bridge that far of a gap.
I just pulled it up. I forgot that they drafted Joe Milton as well this year. So they have a couple rookie quarterbacks in that room alongside Jacoby Brissett.
Obviously, if this is probably a cheap number two on Brissett at $3, barring injury, right?
Yeah, he's -300 to be the week one starter. Drake May +220, which I think would be silly for them ultimately to try to force the hand and stent his development like that. I understand the back end of the season. If the season's gone, that's fine. Get some reps under his belt. What Curran is saying here of preparing for 2025, looking ahead, I would just worry about the risk of injury to an extent. But more than anything else, we say it all the time, how much young quarterbacks are ruined when they're thrust into a bad situation. And Drake May has a lot of area for growth. They know that. Gerard Mayo has been plain when he has spoken about it, that I would just hate to see that stunted too early.
Part of the reason I thought that they would trade down is that they were so far away from being a playoff contender in terms of 2 or 3 years away, that you would be wasting the first 2 years of the rookie salary cap, and maybe they could stockpile tips and trade down and not take me. I really believed that. I thought they were going to trade out of that position.
Well, ultimately, obviously, they take Drake May in the top three of the draft. Won 4 games a season ago. Win total this year set at 4.5. It is one of the most, if not the most, difficult schedule on paper in the NFL this year. Juice to the over, though, -160 to get that 5th win or more in New England. In this year's NFL betting guide, which we referenced at the top of this segment, Steve Mackinnon put together a few interesting betting systems and trends involving rookie quarterbacks. At least 3 rookies are expected to start in week 1 with the Bears, Commanders, and Broncos. Caleb Williams, obviously the top overall pick in this year's draft. Jaden Daniels going there to the Washington Commanders. And then Bo Nix, nothing confirmed, but the expectation is that he'll be the starter for Denver. One trend that really stood out to me among this group that Steve Mackinnon has put together that I do think could have potential to be actionable is that they have gotten off to slow starts, particularly in those first 3 weeks of the season. 2-18-1 straight up, 5-15-1 against the spread the last 21 week 1 through 3 games for rookie quarterbacks. Unders also tend to be a trend there, 22-7 to the under the last 29 week 1 through 3 games. And you even look at C.J. Stroud last season, who had a historic rookie season in the National Football League. Even he went 1-2 his first 3 games of the year.
Well, you remember back to opening week, they were in Baltimore. Mm. And I thought, this kid's going to get killed. Because, I mean, they were just getting crushed. He was getting hit every play. You could never have thought that Houston was going to win that division watching week 1. They looked disjointed. No. They looked like he had no rhythm on offense. So I think the big thing is the totals out of this. Week 1 through 3. How about that trend? 76% hitting the game total under the first 3 weeks for rookie quarterbacks. I think of all the stuff Mackinnon did, that was the number that stood out to me.
And that's with the slightly larger sample size even than the previous number about that record. Also, since the start of 2013, rookie starters have combined for a 107-105 ATS record in home games, so just over 50% versus being on the road. And as we look at these quarterbacks this year as well, similar conversation there, where you have 2 of the first 3 games for each of these 3 quarterbacks that are going to be on the road. So you throw in being the young rookie, struggles at the beginning of the season, also having to play in rough road environments. Also, just going back to C.J. Stroud real quickly, last year, they lose that first game at Baltimore, which is a blowout, tough game. They lose versus the Colts in game 2 before they win their first game that many people in the Circus Survivor world will remember well, with the Jacksonville Jaguars that they upset in week 3. That knocked out one of my tickets.
Yeah. Beating pretty well, too.
Because we thought, based on those first 2 games, that, same old Texans, they're back. But then they win that game and looked awesome in it.
Let me ask you this. Are you convinced Bo Nix is starting in Denver?
I mean,
the market says it's -$4 or worse if you want to bet that. You think so?
I think probably a big reason why my mind has swayed in that direction is because I talk to Michael Lombardi every day on this program. And he has made it very clear that Sean Payton, Bo Nix is Sean Payton's guy. He's going all eggs in this basket. This is essentially the guy that he has selected to lead this team moving forward, and that you don't draft him and not start him. That's his opinion.
What a tough spot.
And I'm in agreement with it based on a lot of our conversations.
If you look at the situations for the other two quarterbacks, I think they walk into much better situations, especially Caleb Williams. Walks into almost a perfect situation with that team that you know, won seven games last year, has a great defense, and the first part of their schedule, the first 10 weeks is a very favorable part of their schedule. And then they get into the Detroits and the Green Bays and the Minnesotas playing all their division games late. Denver's bad defensively, not particularly great running. I see very little chance for this kid to do well in his first year. So maybe we look at that week one through three trend with Mackinnon specifically against the Broncos. And this the subset of it when they're a 6.5-point dog or more.
So I have those numbers for you for Denver. Broncos, the first 3 weeks, they're getting 4.5 at Seattle, total 42.5.
Yeah.
They're getting 3 against the Steelers, total 41.5. And they're getting 3.5 at Tampa, total 43.
What's week 4 and 5? Do you have that?
Let me pull it up. They have, they're at the Jets and at home against the Raiders.
I think, you know, this new betting market of a number of wins in your first 5 games, right? This is just more to the trend of you want quick results and not wait for a season long. I think you could bet Denver 0 or 1 win, either one of those markets, you know, and you still are plus. Do you see them winning 2 of their first 5 games? I don't. I know some of the lines are, and they're home to the They're home to the Steelers. Maybe the Raiders, but you get to the Raiders in week 5 and they're 0-4. You can name your price, right? You could bet it the other way and bet the Broncos.
Like, their defense even took a step back last year too.
Terrible. The defense is terrible.
Rough. Season win total for the Broncos, by the way, 5.5, and you are getting plus money on the over.
If you look at Nick's passing yards, like, their defense doesn't get other teams off the field in terms of, you know, a lot of it is how many times is he going to get the ball, how much possession when you're talking about passing yards. When your defense doesn't get the other team off the field, you don't get the ball. Unless they let him score so quick, like LSU did for Jaden Daniels, that he got 3 extra possessions a game, right? Unless you're that bad. But no NFL defense is that bad that they're going to score in 2 or 3 plays. So I just think things are stacked up against Knicks and stacked up against the Broncos this year.
You also mentioned the large underdog point spreads. Yeah. One of Steve Mackinnon's trends here since 2015, rookie quarterbacks facing underdog lines of 6.5 points or more, 15 and 108 straight up, 45, 75, and 3 ATS. So only even covering around 37%. For the Broncos, they have 4 games as of now on these look ahead lines, getting 7.5 in that week 4 game at the Jets, getting 10.5 at the Ravens, 9 at the Chiefs, and 8 at the Bengals. So 4 instances already where we know they're going to be in that spot. It can seem attractive, but maybe not enough
Numbers may be even higher by the time we get to those games.
Yeah. And again, to go back on at least last year, we see these numbers through the last handful of years from Steve Mackinnon, but last year too, CJ Stroud, we told you he was 1-2 in his initial 3 games. Bryce Young had an 0-6 start with the Carolina Panthers. Anthony Richardson dropped the season opener against the Jags, was concussed in game 2, missed 2 games, and then lost his next start in overtime against the Rams. So this is something that we've seen not only over the last couple of years, but most recently last season as well, where these young quarterbacks struggled early.
Yeah, I know you're in favor of not damaging them too early, but it's tough to get to the speed of the game. You know, the preseason in the NFL is just not to get people hurt, right? So, you know, the only young quarterback that played a lot was DTR last year out of everybody in the preseason. So getting up to game speed and reading these defenses that are much more complex takes time and takes film study. And you have to be in the situation to improve on.
One of these young rookie quarterbacks that we didn't get to touch on much, Jaden Daniels. Very fortunate coming up next. JP Finley of NBC Sports Washington, give us the lowdown on all things Commanders and his expectations for the young quarterback in year 1.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSiN NFL Betting Guide. This thing is jam-packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter this season, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections, new quarterback and new head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, plus best futures bets from our VSiN experts and analysts, including in awards markets like MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or you're just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets this season. Head to vsin.com/guide to get your copy of the all-new NFL betting guide today. That's vsin.com/guide. Last block, we discussed rookie quarterback trends from Steve Mackinnon in the guide. Young QBs expected to start in 2024. Among those, Commanders young quarterback Jaden Daniels. And while the hope is certainly that Daniels is QB1 of the future, this year Washington will set a record for NFL record starting a different QB1 for an eighth straight season. That's not a trend that they would like to have continue. To help us break down all things Washington Commanders and this quarterback situation, we welcome in J.P. Finley on the Progressive Guest Line, NBC Sports Washington. You can catch him as well on 106.7 The Fan out there at J.P. Finley, NBCS on X. Thanks so much for the time. And let's start there with Jaden Daniels. How would you characterize the expectations for him in his rookie season?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I'd say they're relatively high. I think it helps a little bit that the expectations for Caleb Williams are I'd say maybe a little outrageous, that people are, Jaden Daniels isn't kind of as prominent nationally, but I think if you look at the success he had last year at LSU, and that was a fairly pro style offense, as much as pro style exists in college football anymore. And the big throws he can make, but he's also just a smart, cerebral quarterback that I think, you know, the biggest thing you got to make that jump from college to pros is making sure you anticipate throws and not waiting for guys to get open. And I think there's really good evidence that he could get that done. And with that, I think comes some legitimate expectations.
JP, you know, I thought Sam Howell did an undersung job last year behind an offensive line that gave up the most sacks, and obviously he had the interceptions. What have the Commanders done to shore up that line to give Daniels a chance to succeed?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a twofold, right? Because the line wasn't great last year, but Howell also, of the sack total, at least a third of them were on Sam, and maybe closer to half. He just, one of the reasons he slid in the draft is because he held onto the ball too long, and we saw it last season in Washington. He's definitely a super tough kid, and there's a lot to like there, but for him, for that to work as a pro, he's going to have to figure out that internal clock. As for what they've done to address the line, they drafted a big kid out of TCU, Brandon Coleman, that they really think can be a left tackle of the future. I don't know that he's left tackle week one, but that's their hope. They re-signed a guy, Cornelius Lucas, who's been a swing tackle for them. He could be your left tackle week one. They signed Tyler Biadasz from Dallas to kind of cement that center spot. Center has been a real problem for Washington for a number of years. And they signed Nick Gates last year from the Giants, and Gates was a disaster. Couldn't be a nicer, funnier guy, but he was bad on the field. And that really caused some problems for them. Then they added a guy, Nick Allegretti from Kansas City. He projects to be their starting left guard. Allegretti was kind of like a versatile interior guard in KC and wasn't necessarily a starter, but they're hoping he can be a starter for them. The right side of the line, the best lineman they've got is a right guard, Sam Cosmi, who actually, it'll be interesting to see how his season goes because he's going into the last year of his rookie deal, former second rounder that I think could be looking to get paid. And then the right tackle is this dude, Andrew Wiley, who had a pretty subpar year last year, and I think will be facing a lot tougher scrutiny. The other thing to keep in mind with Washington last year, I mean, that offense under Eric Bieniemy was just so broken. The play calling was atrocious. They Sam Howell's getting just his block knocked off, and they just never ran the ball. It was remarkable, the lack of run pass balance, and in turn the lack of play action passes. Washington was really, really broken last year. I actually asked Dan Quinn this last month, you know, how much of last year's tape can you watch to evaluate? And he was diplomatic and just said, everything's a fresh start. But I truly think both offensively and defensively, that staff, Rivera, Jack Del Rio, Bieniemy, everything was so broken that you don't really get a good evaluation from what it was.
Yeah, Sam Howell sacked 65 times last year. JP Finley joining us on the Progressive guest line here of NBC Sports Washington. With that in mind, I was looking at the Offensive Rookie of the Year odds, and obviously Caleb Williams is the favorite, number one overall pick going to the Chicago Bears, but Jaden Daniels right there behind him at plus 550 with a new coordinator and voice like Cliff Kingsbury, who did help Kyler Murray get an Offensive Rookie of the Year honor back a couple years ago. Jaden Daniels, the multifaceted skill set that he has as a passer as well as with his legs, I feel like that's a thing that people are very attracted to. But will they win enough games to give him an opportunity to earn that honor? How do you view the win total sitting at 6.5 for this Washington Commanders team and Jaden Daniels as a potential Offensive Rookie of the Year candidate?
I think if I had to make a play on one of those two, I'd be more intrigued by Daniels Rookie of the Year. Just because I think if he goes out and plays really well, even if they go 7-10, I think he can still win the Rookie of the Year. And if you look at the success Cliff had right away with Kyler, I think they've got some pretty good skill position, like some weapons for Jaden coming in. Caleb might have better weapons, but I trust Kingsbury better than whatever the Bears are trying to do offensively. I also really like the two-back set they have set up for this year with Eckler and Brian Robinson. The win total, you guys would know better than me being in Vegas, but the last I saw, it was pretty juiced to take the over, like they were trying to get you. The win total makes me a little bit nervous. I think people underestimate how awful this defense was last year, and I know that the Dan Quinn, Joe Witt-led staff should be able to improve their secondary and some of these abysmal passing defense numbers, but I just don't know that the talent's there. I know they overhauled everything. They had the most significant roster turnover of any team in the NFL, as they should. They were 4-13 and didn't have a Pro Bowler. But they signed a ton of one-year veteran kind of stopgap guys, and there's just not a lot of depth, and we all know that injuries happen in the NFL. To me, a guy like Emmanuel Forbes is the ultimate test case of if coaching was the problem or if the previous administration talent evaluation was the problem. That guy was a first-round corner from last year that was benched by week six. And I frankly am not entirely sure what his future in the NFL is unless this group can figure things out with him. But the win total scares me a little. I do think they can get to 7 and get over that. And if Jaden comes through and hits at a high level, if Jaden proves to be the dude, then I think they can get to 8 or 9. Their schedule's not overly daunting. From October to mid-December, they don't travel anywhere further than New York, which is, 2 hours from D.C.
JP, forgive me. I want to ask a question about the Nationals. I think in the National League, in these central teams between St. Louis, Chicago, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati are going to beat each other up. I think the Padres will be one of the wild cards. Obviously, the Braves or Phillies the other. I took the Nats at 300-1 to win the World Series. I like Jake Irvin a lot. He pitched terrific yesterday. Parker's been solid. It's no longer a national betting day to fade Patrick Corbin. Mackenzie Gore throws hard to go young. Do the Nats have a shot to make? What is your assessment of the Nats, and can they get themselves in? Currently, 4.5 games out of the last wild card in the National League.
Yeah, I mean, their pitching's been carrying them all year. I don't know if you saw, they had this kid, DJ Hearns, they just brought up, who absolutely dealt in his last start. I don't know how much their bullpen's been really good. Kyle Finnegan's got maybe an all-star when they make those commissioner picks later this week or next week, whenever that is. Here's the reason why I like your bet is James Wood. They just called up number one prospect in baseball. He's playing left field for them. He had the game-winning RBI on July 3rd, which was just an awesome piece of hitting from a young kid. He's big, he's strong, he's fast. He raked in the minors. You put his bat in the middle of this lineup, and all of a sudden it looks a lot different for a team that runs really well. My pause for you is if they are – I'm really curious what happens at the deadline – because Mike Rizzo is ahead of schedule in this rebuild for the organization. And I think if he could flip a couple pieces to get more for the future, he might do it, depending how far out they are.
JP, you're awesome. Thanks so much for the time, and expect us to be bugging you more as we get closer to the NFL season. Thank you.
Thanks. Take care.
Thanks.
JP Finley, follow him on X at JP Finley NBCS. We're going to hit the break. When we return, resetting for hour two of the Lombardi Line. You're listening to VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.